Stickies under the table.
All right.
Sandpaper and some stuff going on here.
We'll call the Senate Health and Human Services Finance Division to order for Wednesday, February 4th. Today we will be going over the governor's proposals for the health-related boards. And so members, not all of the boards have change pages, and so and they all have their own numbering, so there isn't a common numbering system in this section. And so what staff diligently did overnight... Oh, I'm corrected. I guess all of the boards have changes, but most of them are just the 1.8%, and we're not going to go over boards that are just the 1.8%, but that does apply to all boards in the governor's proposal. So thank you for that correction. So back to the colored tabs. All of the boards have their own numbered order set, and so in order to help orient members, staff, worked late and put colored tabs by the boards that have actual changes other than the 1.8, and put the colors on the sheet so that members can quickly orient themselves as we work through this testimony. So we'll hear from the six boards that have changes in addition to the 1.8 that applies across the board. And this will be a little bit of a hybrid as well, because we're going to ask for the boards to present the governor's proposals as other agencies did, and then because we gave others the opportunity to have 2 or 3 minutes to give us a heads up about other things that may be coming, I would give the boards that same 2 to 3 minutes at the end of presenting what the governor presented to let us know what else might be coming. At the end of the hearing, then, I would plan on opening it up for the public and asking if anyone else had testimony to offer, either in support or opposition to any of the items discussed during the hearing. So that's the housekeeping, how we plan to proceed. We did only assume we can get out of here by 10:30 today. We didn't need to go beyond the time slot, so we did not reserve the room till 11 as we do sometimes. So with that, we will start with the Ombudsman for Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities, Roberta Oppheim. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and step us through your orange tab. We'll see if it works. I haven't even tried it yet. Orange. That it does.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roberta Oppheim. I'm the State Ombudsman for Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities. And we're here today because we have 2 change items in the budget. Just briefly, for those who may be new or not aware, our agency was created in 97 to basically be a direct service to citizens, to be a watchdog over the mental health, developmental disabilities, chemical dependency, and children with emotional disturbance. And so we receive a lot of questions, concerns, complaints about how people in the system are being treated, or confusion over what services they may be eligible for. We may help navigate, or we may know resources that the average citizen would not be aware of, where we could assist them in cutting through some of the red tape. I like to say that sometimes we're the anti-bureaucracy of the bureaucracy, which is a good job to have. What I wanted to indicate was that our base budget over the years, we've certainly had some increases, but the buying power of those increases has diminished over time, to the point where at the height of the agency it had 21 staff members. I've been here 21 years, and it's never been at 21 staff members since I've been here, so that was quite a long time ago. And we've been slowly but surely, with the cost increases, the inflation, the salary increases, it just has not kept up. So our base budget has been at 1.65, I think it is, million. And when we looked at projected staffing needs, current staffing, and caseload, we discovered that the only way we could stay within that budget was by laying off staff. And because there are certain operating expenses we cannot adjust. On average, over the years, our budget has been about 90% salaries. That's to talk to, make phone calls. We have several functions outlined in the law that we do. We do death and serious injury reviews, so every one of those are reported to us within 24 hours. That has been increasing almost exponentially over the years from about 200 deaths up to 800 deaths a year now, and maybe 300 serious injuries. We now are at about 1,200 serious injuries a year. And the only way to handle that kind of caseload is with the human resources that are needed to do that. We also have individual cases which can are getting more and more complex as the system changes. We see more and more complexity in finding solutions, cutting through the red tape. Roadblocks or barriers that no one intended to be there but are nonetheless there. And sometimes it's just confusion because the individual is emotional and they think they're not being treated right, which they all have a right to be treated with dignity and respect. And sometimes it's just confusion over understanding the laws, the rules that govern the situation. In addition, in 1997, we were given the task, but without the language, they forgot to put the language in, but of being home to the Civil Commitment Training and Resource Center, and we think that in our law, it clearly implies we should do some systemic work. In other words, if we can train any number of individuals, then we can forestall some of the complaints that we get. And so by training on the civil commitment process, which is very expensive for the state, for the counties, and by minimizing the need to use civil commitment, we hope to save the system money. So with that, just with our base requirements, we would go down to 15 FTEs according to the budget pages that you received if no adjustment to the base was applied. So change item number one is an adjustment to the base, and in the governor's proposal, it's 113 for the first year and 228, and this is really just to catch up with inflation and try to keep status quo staffing. And the governor has recommended that change. The second change deals with a much larger systemic issue that our agency has been facing, and that is to add back, even if we add two FTEs, we will not be up to the 21. So we'll still be below our highest level complement. But these two positions specifically would be to assist with the Jensen Settlement Agreement, and I can go into more detail if people are not familiar with it, which includes the Olmstead Plan. And for some reason, although we wrote the report that sort of started the settlement, the lawsuit, which wasn't our intent. Our intent was to improve the system. We weren't part of the actual lawsuit, but then after the lawsuit, the judge and the court monitor wanted us to be advisors to the court monitor and the court about the system, you know, sort of in a fair, impartial way. So we serve as a consultant to all parties, DHS, class counsel, the court monitor. And I could never have estimated the amount of time that it took. There's just meetings after meetings after meetings, hashing out things, trying to find better ways to do business. And then the Olmstead Plan, we sit as an ex officio member of the governor's sub-cabinet on the Olmstead Plan. And that kind of change culturally across the state, system-wide across the state, just doesn't come without a lot of very hard work, disagreements, and understandings. And So we really need those positions to, one, have someone that can spell the number of meetings to sort of divide the workload, get a supervisor freed up to do some more of that type of work. So, and that is 180 in the first year and 185 in the second year of the biennium. So, and 185 in the tails. You know, I don't want to go into a great deal of detail. I know you have other things you want to hear, but I certainly would stand for any questions that the committee has. In terms of anything new, nothing additional is being proposed by our office at this point that affects the budget. At best, we might tweak some language or something like that, but we don't. And these are the two items that are critical to the needs of the agency at this time.
Thank you, Ms. Oppheim. Questions of members? Senator Franzen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. And Ms. Oppheim, thank you.
But I respond to anything when people start with an O.
Thank you. My question is with regards to the governor's recommendations. I know he does not have the state quality councils in it, and I've received some inquiry about that. Can you talk about your position on those and that council and the request? I think is $4 million to expand them regionally to the rest of the state, and how you work with them, and perhaps why that's not in the proposal moving forward.
Ms.
Well,
Oppheim?
Thank you, Chair and Senator Friends. As to why it's not in the governor's budget, I'm not sure. That was a proposal that came out of the Department of Human Services. And for people not familiar with us, we are completely independent of DHS.
Yeah.
However, we support the Quality Council. We support quality assurance initiatives. And we have a member that sits on that Quality Council. I can't speak to why the governor didn't include it, but I believe there's a desperate need for consistent quality assurance. You know, I'm not sure that all the members of the committee are on the same page, but I think we can get there. But we can't get there if it's not staffed or funded in a way. So fundamentally, we would support that, but we support the governor's budget also.
Any other questions of Ms. Oppheim on the governor's proposed change pages? Ms. Oppheim, do you have any other? So you said, I think, that you don't have other proposals that you're going to bring forward in addition to what the governor proposed in order to stabilize and allow you to continue your work with Jensen settlement and Olmstead planning and maintain your 15 levels, correct?
Correct. We have no financial initiatives coming forward besides these two.
Maybe some policy ones.
Policy or language, which
sure.
We think is cleanup language, but others may
yep.
disagree. So
we'll get around to that in the session. Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, besides Ms. Oppheim's request and then the governor's request for approximately $4 million, nine FTEs, is there any other dollars and funds that need to go to the Jensen settlement? It's just those two?
In our budget, I think it's the monies that you mentioned, the nine FTEs, Ms. Oppheim's, but there's also other pieces. Commissioner Jessen kind of rattled them off in a bullet point thing. I don't think it's in our packet anywhere, but there's things over at Minnesota Housing Finance. There's items in deed. There's items throughout the budget, Olmstead related, and we could get a summary of that.
That'd
I think
nice.
It would be mm-hmm. good to do. I mean, we do have probably, we provide a lot of the care for individuals with disabilities and needs that are served. And so we have a big role in it, but there are additional items throughout the governor's budget. I think that the Olmstead office itself is funded out of deed, I want to say. I mean, so we don't even have the Olmstead office in our jurisdiction. Ms. Oppheim, do you have additional?
Well, the comment I wanted to make, and Chair and Senator Rosen, is that The governor did, there were a number of initiatives that were labeled with the Olmstead umbrella, and they were all submitted to the governor, and the governor decided which of those initiatives would be, he would consider to be the Olmstead package. So I believe there is a summary sheet that can be provided that outlines those. Your second question was about the Jensen Settlement Agreement, and I certainly know that DHS has incurred a number of costs related to making the transformational change, but I can't speak to those specific items.
Nice to have those brought up.
Senator Rosen, too, we did just review and found the page in the PowerPoint that the commissioner went through, and she has a page on housing in Olmstead and has a list of additional DHS Olmstead related. It's slide 27, and they include expansion of the mental health crisis services is in the spirit of Olmstead, quality improvement and expansion of ACT teams, housing with supports, the Jensen settlement administrative costs, the psychiatric residential treatment facilities, increased capacity for individuals with complex conditions, and transition initiative flexibility to use some of that money that they weren't successful in doing transitions with that we set aside last year. So those are sort of DHS's, but they did also step us through in bullet form rattling off of things in other agencies. I mentioned a couple of them. I don't know if I got the entire list from the governor's budget, but maybe we can follow up with that.
I think, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think Commissioner Tingersoll could give you the package summary because she is the new chair of the Olmstead sub-cabinet in the new executive order.
Okay. We'll ask for that of the new chair. Any other questions of Ms. Opheim? Seeing none, thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
We will move to the Board of Dentistry. This is the green tab. Marshall Schrag, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
So much for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With your books, I mean.
My name is Marshall Schrag. I'm glad to still be the executive director of the Board of Dentistry. And I will spare you the introduction to the Health Regulatory Boards because I think all of you are familiar with who we are and what we do. So we'll just each individually go through our the governor's budget proposal for the affected boards. The Board of Dentistry regulates over 17,000 dental professionals, dentists, dental therapists, dental hygienists, and dental assistants. Our board also acts as the administering board for the Health Professional Services Program, also known as HPSP, which is a joint program of the boards and the Department of Health, which is established to ensure that health professionals with illnesses that may impair their ability to practice safely are appropriately monitored. HPSP anticipates addressing the committee at a future meeting. The change items for the Board of Dentistry included in the governor's budget include a $50,000 request for staff salary adjustment, which is the 1.8%, and it also includes some funding to fund a position that is full-time but only funded at a half-time position, so it allows us to actually hire that person, which we anticipate doing in the very near future. It would allow us to continue supporting that position. There's a $16,000 increased request for hours for a part-time staff dentist. We have an intermittent staff dentist who reviews complex cases for the board. Last year, that individual had such a volume of complex cases that we expended the budget for him within the first 6 months of the fiscal year. And we anticipate that our cases continue to be more and more complex, and we like to have this person review those cases instead of having board members take extra time to have to review those. In many cases, they're not able to do that. This person actually has a special background in addressing fraudulent billing cases. We've got a $2,000 rent increase. communications that are $2,000 that allows us to enhance our database and software for email communications with our licensees. And then an additional $14,000 in travel, which is to offset cuts that were made to allow us to participate in conferences and in test development for national and regional tests, both in the United States, and there's also a Canadian test that our board is involved in preparing and reviewing test items. Those change item requests total $84,000 a year. Additionally, the Board of Dentistry is now operating in the red, as we have experienced a rather sudden and dramatic leveling off of growth in the number of dental professionals licensed. We had seen a steady increase in licensure up until the current biennium, in which we apparently hit a ceiling. As a result, I reported to our board in October that we would need to consider a fee increase. The fee increase, if approved, will bring the board into a positive cash flow during the year of 2019. That anticipates the fee increase at the level that we proposed, and it also anticipates that the volume of licensees will stay level. It's really hard to say because we had a pretty regular and steady increase in the number of licensees, and then we leveled off, like I said, surprisingly. We don't know if that's a blip or if that's a trend, and it's a little early to tell. But we do need to be prepared. Right now we are facing a deficit. To understand the fee increase, I'd like you to refer to the table at the bottom of page 7 in our budget proposal. There's a column there that you'll notice that's entitled Proposed Actual Charge, and another that's entitled Proposed New Fee Max in Statute. Are you guys there?
Yep.
Okay. The Board of Dentistry statutes outline our fees as a not-to-exceed amount. The dollar amount that the board anticipates charging for license renewals is the lower amount shown, the one in the proposed actual charges. However, the maximum or not-to-exceed amount is what should be adopted in statute. This allows the board to readily adjust fees in response to changing circumstances, either up or down. The Board of Dentistry has not raised fees since approximately 1994, and in 1999 actually reduced fees. They stayed at the reduced level until 2012, when fees were adjusted to the previous level. It's actually been over then 20 years since the Board of Dentistry requested a fee increase. The board appreciates that this is not something that you take lightly, and neither do we. Although we and our licensees would prefer not to be taking this step, the associations representing our licensees understand that it cannot be avoided. I'm happy to respond to any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Schrag. The proposed actual charge says for 15 and 16. I mean, we're over half done with 15.
I actually noticed that in the report when I was reviewing that. Thank you for addressing that, Mr. Chair. That's actually meant to be the
16-17. Okay. And what is the today's maximum maximum in statute? Is that the current? You're raising the maximum currently. Is that true or?
Right. The current fee that we've got in the first column is what we're current. What's currently the maximum in statute? Right.
Okay. And then on the page 5, the first one, I think I'd like to clarify. The proposal says the governor recommends increasing the Board of Dentistry's general fund appropriation by $84,000. I think that's also not correct, I'd like to verify.
Mr. Chair, thank you for clarifying that as well. I did not notice that, but I'm glad that you did. That is one distinction that all of my colleagues will present to you, is that we are funded through the special revenue fund through fees that are charged to our licensees. So that
we
is
cross
there,
general.
There
fund
are no dollars. General fund dollars involved in our board.
Okay. Senator Sharon.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Schrag, for your presentation. As you know, our health policy committee is also responsible for the oversight of the boards who, and I think the The statement on page 2 about the board members each appointed by the governor to protect the public, not the profession, but must always take into a point of view how to best protect the public and not the profession. Of course, we know the boards are responsible for maintaining the standards for the profession, which is the important way in which we do protect the public. But I noticed that the membership of the board is 5 dentists, dental hygienists, 1 dental hygienist, dental assistant, and 2 public members. And although I haven't compared this to other boards, I've begun, because of an earlier difficulty we had, a concern about the capacity of our boards. You weren't the targeted board at the time, but our boards to really make the decisions in the disciplinary process or in all of the review processes that protect the public rather than the profession. I'm being more deliberate about paying attention to that with all of the boards. There are a number of questions, I think, that come before the board in which the group, which is primarily made up of those who are in the profession, will be making the decisions. And so I'm inquiring, and I don't know how you can best answer that because I know you're representing the board, but how are we assured that, you know, with increased revenue, which is to carry out this mission, that in fact, is the posture and the position that the board takes when they're confronted with various questions, that they're looking at it not only from what the profession may or may not want to do because it's most expedient or easiest for them, but what needs to be done in order to create the environment that's safe for the practice, for the people to rely on that practice.
Mr. Schreck?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, I really do very much appreciate that question. It really goes to the basis of what the boards are and what our responsibility is. I would maybe even speak on behalf of my colleagues that is perhaps one of the things that we interact most with our board members to do is to remind them that they were appointed to their position on the board because of their experience in the profession, but not to represent the profession. That everybody, when they come to the board, is responsible for representing the public and the public's interest. It is challenging because people are still employed in the profession and still affiliated with their professional associations. And in fact, in the case of dentistry, where they are often business owners and very engaged in not just dentistry as a small D or a big D, but they're very engaged in the profession and professionalism. It's a challenge for each of them, and I think that the executive directors help to provide some of that oversight and direction. I guess I'm not quite sure how else to address that. We've got a majority of our board is dentists. There are 5 out of the 9 are dentists. We need a number of dentists on our board in order to be able to conduct the business of the board, specifically in evaluating credentials for applicants coming in from other states and for addressing complaints, which is a big part of the work that we do.
Senator Sharon.
There will be a report coming out soon, or at least I don't think I've seen it yet, which was a request for the auditor to take a look at the relationship to take a look at the disciplinary process within the Board of Nursing, but also to take a look at the relationship between the HPSP as an oversight resource for the boards for impaired professionals, and I'm looking forward to that report because it will impact your relationship with HPSB as much as any of the other boards, and I think that's really an important process. But what I'm trying to figure out, because we sort of, I think, got a couple of situations that have been emerging where the press is the first to sort of raise the question about whether or not the boards are in fact carrying out the second part of their mission, which is really paying attention to protecting public's protection
as opposed to the protection of the profession. And I'm beginning to wonder how can, other than finally having to react to some crisis in the press, mm-hmm. we can be assuring and reminding and engaging these boards in all of those responsibilities. I'm not sure how to do the oversight for that as a chair of Health and Human Services Policy, unless I attend the meetings, which I can't do. So any advice you might have about that, I would certainly appreciate. But I just want to communicate to all the boards that, you know, when these requests come for more money, it's to carry out this function. And I need to be assured that that function is completely being carried out, especially of interest to me is the part that protects the public when they go for services with a licensed professional in their dentist offices and in their chairs. So please communicate that back to the board for me.
So that was a comment, a direction for all boards,
yes,
that I think all of us share. But Mr. Schreck, do you
Senator Sharon, I will, message received, and I will definitely take that back to our board for discussion. Just off the top of my head, I think that it is a discussion not only for our board, but for us as executive directors. And I'm not sure that it's the role of the Council of Health Boards to look at, but that might be a venue for us to have a discussion across all boards and including board members in that. So we will take that to heart. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions of members on the governor's change pages for the Board of Dentistry? Mr. Schreck, any additional budget items that you plan on bringing forward that weren't included in the governor's budget?
Mr. Chair, as I alluded to, HPSP had made a proposal for some change item increases that weren't addressed, and they are looking specifically at being able to have funding for an additional case manager that I believe that they'll be addressing at a future time. Thank you.
And so we'll see that coming forward in the form of a bill.
Yes, sir.
Excellent. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
We will move on to the Nursing Home Administrators Board, Randy Snyder and Julie Vagnus. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record. This is the dark pink tab in members' board and books.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Randy Snyder, the Executive Director for the Minnesota Board of Examiners for Nursing Home Administrators and the Minnesota Board of Optometry, and also serve as the co-lead for the Administrative Services Unit, which manages all the back offices functions for all the boards. With me is Julie Vagnus, who is our Accounting Supervisor, our CFO, if you will, for all the boards, and she manages our daily operations for ASU. Our role today is to do a very quick overview of the collective work of the boards and then to present the governor's budget change items for ASU. Again, Mr. Schreck outlined a few items, but there are 18 boards that are co-located together. 15 are health licensing boards, which receive no general funds, are all fee-driven. We also support the work of three general-funded boards, cosmetology, barbers, and the EMSRB board. It's a model that is nationally recognized as being very good, to have our front-end subject matter experts deal with licensees and to have coordinated back-office functions to be efficient. Those services that Julie is in charge of include budgeting, fiscal analysis, human resources, payment transactions, purchasing, printing, operations, and contracting for us. She also served to coordinate the Minute staff, the former Minute staff. They were housed with us within her department. Again, we'll go through her items. There are no general fund tax dollars that will be looked at. We're 100% fee generated. 183 board members are reminded at each of my board meetings anyway that they are here to serve the public protection piece. And that is something we do take serious, but the measurement is not really there, Senator Sharon, and I appreciate your comments. We should get that on video and show it before every board meeting, perhaps, or something. There are four boards that are seeking fee increases and appropriation increase, and they will be here today. And with that, I'll turn it over to Julie Vagnus.
Ms. Vagnus?
I'm Julie Vagnus, the Accounting Director for the Administrative Services Unit. And we do have one more task that the Administrative Services Unit is responsible for that Randy missed, and it's our Volunteer Healthcare Provider Program. We purchase malpractice insurance for volunteer doctors, dentists, and nurses. We have 29 clinics registered in our program and 105 volunteers registered currently. The Administrative Services Unit has three change items included in the governor's budget. Our first one is our operating adjustment. You'll find it on page 7. This is just the 1.8% operational increase to cover the projected insurance, the taxes, and the retirement factors. It's an increase of $14,000 in fiscal year 16 and $29,000 in fiscal year 17. Our second request is a combined retirement package. It's a one-time appropriation request of $320,000. It's on page 8. And this request is to cover 15 possible retiring state employees within the health-related licensing boards. This will cover their severance payout and their vacation payout for these long-term employees. Over the past several years, the health-related boards have combined all retirement expenses into one change item instead of having many different change items by each board. When the employee retires, funds then will be transferred from the Administrative Services Unit account into the individual board to cover those exact payout expenses. And we currently have six different boards that we are anticipating possible retirements over the next 2 years. Our third and final request is on page 10. And this is our Minute data center and our Tridian cost increase. The first part of the request is an increase to cover the costs related to the Minute directive moving our data center from our building to the Minute Enterprise data center and to cover the costs associated with managed hosting the services. This includes moving our data, the equipment, licensing fees, backup services, and hosting services. Minute estimated that it would cost the health boards approximately $180,000 each year to move our center over there. Our request is $140,000 each year. We currently have $40,000 in our budget that we currently pay for our annual licensing fees, backup services, and other costs. The second part of the request is to cover the Tridian website hosting. Currently, all 18 of the health boards have converted to the Tridian website. Initially, we paid about $1,000 per year for that service. Now that we're all there, the Tridian costs have increased to $6,000 a year, so we're asking for a $5,000 increase. I thank you for the opportunity to speak, and I stand for questions.
Thank you. Any questions of members? And from the nursing home board administrators or board or the administrative services, any items not in the governor's budget that you would be bringing forward, budgetary items?
Mr. Chair, from the nursing home administrators, there will be no change item or request a separate bill.
And there will be no request from the administrative services unit at this time.
Excellent. Mr. Snyder?
Mr. Chair, if there is some direction this committee would like us to go back and work on a collaborative bill of those items that were not included, whatever direction you would give us, we will certainly be happy to go back and do it collaboratively or whatever direction you might find most efficient.
Yeah. Members are pretty good at, if they have ideas of things that need to be done, reaching out and contacting folks. It was more in the nature of, were there things that you had requested of that the governor put in his budget that you weren't successful in getting to his budget, that you were considering trying to find a member to introduce a separate bill to support? And you're asking about other boards that are not here? Is that
correct?
Okay.
Mr. Chair, there were some items that were not included in the governor's budget. We did discuss that yesterday. We certainly want to support our governor as CEO.
Sure.
And if there are other items that were not included, if there's a better way to put those all together on behalf of all 15 boards in one bill or whatever direction you'd have, we'll be happy to try to present.
You know, it probably would be best if we had one bill that encompassed all of the requests that the boards collectively want to pursue that might not have made the governor's budget, and that would help us manage the conversation best would be my initial take, but we can poll members, and if they have other thoughts, that might be helpful, and we can work with that. But I mean, I think that would be my gut about the best approach. Before we move on, though, let me just actually, staff said that Ms. Vagnus, you were really helpful in setting up this meeting with all of the various boards, which is actually a pretty complex process. And so, thank you for that support of getting this before the committee in a way, in an organized manner, that we could work through these issues. With that, we will move to the Board of Optometry. Randy again.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I am Randy Snyder, the Executive Director for the Minnesota Board of Optometry. For years, this board has been fortunate to manage without a significant reset of their budget, but we find ourselves required to add fees and increase the appropriation in this session to meet our core function and the essential services of the board, and appreciate the governor including those items, our change item request. Some information regarding this budget, just some background information. There are 1,060 licensed optometrists in the state of Minnesota. We show a gradual increase and probably will reach a milestone of 1,100 this year. About 75% of the population requires vision correction to be successful in their daily living. The board has not increased fees. Our fees are found on page 7 of your materials. And the board has not increased fees on license renewal since 1984. And since I will never again in my career be able to say we haven't raised fees in 31 years, I'd like to repeat that. The fees have not been raised on license renewal since 1984. And unfortunately, we find ourselves in that spot, fully supported by all stakeholders that we have. The board will ask for a not-to-exceed amount, and we currently do not collect enough fees sufficient to cover our current year of 2015. We came before both the Senate, which was successful last year, and the House, and did not get our bill through last year. Our request is for past efficient fee structures combined with increasing salaries over the years, rent, meetings, and small amounts that have just accumulated to make up that $30,000 request and $35,000 request. Even with these fee increases, the national average is $212. As you see on page 7, our new fee would be $135, so it's still significantly below the national average when it comes to the annual renewal fee. This is a very cautious board that likes to manage their money well and has done so over the years very effectively. And with that, Mr. Chair, I think I will just stand for questions. It's pretty self-explanatory. If there are any questions, I would be happy to answer those.
Thank you, Mr. Snyder. Any questions of members? Seeing none, we'll move to the Minnesota Board of Pharmacy.
Mr. Chair, could I just
add that?
Yeah, Mr. Snyder, I'm sorry. Senate File 383 is our policy bill, and we will be back this year. It was successful through the Senate side. We appreciate their great work. The House did not hear that bill, but Senate File 383 will be back before you.
Excellent. And that's a policy
matter. Driven.
Yep, and I recall the conversations about it. We'll entertain it again. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
With that, we'll move to the Board of Pharmacy. Beth Ferguson, the Deputy Director, the yellow tab in members' packets.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Beth Ferguson, and I have served as the Deputy Director for the Minnesota Board of Pharmacy since October of 2013. I am here on behalf of Dr. Cody Weiberg, the Board's Executive Director, who is enjoying some time away from the office, and this is my first time presenting to the committee. I'm here to outline the governor's budget. The Board of Pharmacy has received approval from the governor to seek an increase in appropriations in the amount of $114,000 in fiscal year 2016 and $155,000 in fiscal year 2017. The Board of Pharmacy needs an increase in the appropriations to cover the cost of hiring a complaint coordinator to better manage the increasing number of complaints the board is receiving. Due to several factors, the board has seen the number of complaints that need to be annually processed triple since fiscal year 2008. There are increased costs related to the handling of disciplinary cases. More cases require disciplinary action because the board has substantiated allegations that serious violations of statutes and rules have occurred. Some of these cases have included company of drugs in substandard manner, the theft of controlled substances, and also illegal drug wholesaling. There are increased costs related to the prescription monitoring program, which the board has been tasked by the legislature to administer. This includes a requirement passed in 2014 to institute a process known as unsolicited reporting. There are also increased costs for in-state travel for inspections and complaint investigations. The number of facilities licensed by the board has increased by 31% during the past decade, and the number of individuals licensed by the board has increased by 49% during the same period of time. The governor has also authorized the board to request an increase in fees that is projected to generate an additional $379,000 in revenues annually. And the fee increase is larger than the requested increase in appropriation because of an increase in indirect costs, which are covered outside of the board's appropriation. The recommended fee increase is necessary to cover the increased appropriation that the board is requesting. Also, the board's portion of costs of administration of the prescription monitoring program, and to address year-over-year growth in the board's operational expenses. If approved, this will be only the second increase in fees during the past 15 years. By contrast, the average length of time between prior fee increases dating back to 1950 was every 3 years. Those are my comments, Mr. Chair. I want to thank the committee for their time, and I stand for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Ferguson. On page 7, it says that this amount represents a 4.8% increase. Is that a typo? Most of the other boards got a, most of the other agencies got a 1.8 across the board. Is that a typo, or is this one different?
I believe this one is different.
Okay, so it is a 4.8 increase?
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions of members? Senator Rosen?
Mr. Chair, and Ms. Ferguson, I guess I'm just confused. When we did pass the prescription monitoring program, I did think that to implement that unsolicited reporting was not going to cost any money. So I'm kind of surprised that we are being charged for it now. And then in 2017, we jump up to $155,000. That's about a $41,000 increase for one FTE. That's
Mr. Chair, I believe that's
Ms. Ferguson.
I believe that's to cover the cost for the complaint coordinator and also for the operational expenses.
And the unsolicited reporting, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask Ms. Barb Carter, the program manager for the prescription monitoring program, to come to the table to address that.
Ms. Carter, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and provide any insights you have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Barb Carter, and I manage the prescription monitoring program within the Board of Pharmacy. To answer your question, last year when we came before you and requested the ability to perform the unsolicited reporting functions, we did build some money into that request. That was to hire a new staff person, and that process up and running. What we're finding is that there is a cost that is associated with that in the postage, the mailings, and then obviously we have that other staff person who will be continuing on with us until further notice.
And you would be raising the fees to cover the cost, so there isn't a general fund cost. It would all come out of the special revenue fund.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Any other questions of members? All right. Well, thank you very much for that. We will move on to the Minnesota Board of Social Work. Kate Zacher-Pate, the Executive Director. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Excuse me, and members of the committee. I am Kate Zacher-Pate, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Social Work, and the board really appreciates the opportunity to be able to speak to you on behalf of the board in relation to the governor's budget, which is very important in order for us to continue our mission. I will give you just a little bit of background information and then speak more specifically to the proposals in the governor's budget. You know, as you are aware, the health licensing boards really have core public safety missions. And for the Board of Social Work, as with the other boards, You know, it really is about keeping Minnesota citizens safe by ensuring quality services, and we establish and enforce those standards for professional practice. Specifically with the Board of Social Work, you know, to get to our mission, we are responsible for licensing social workers who meet professional standards. We investigate and resolve complaints that come to us by citizens. And we also have an important responsibility to educate social workers and citizens about the board and about licensing responsibilities across our state. As you've heard already, and I guess I just want to reiterate, that the Board of Social Work, like the other health licensing boards, receives no general fund dollars. We are entirely fee-supported. And a bit of a snapshot about the Board of Social Work, I think may be interesting for you. We have four different licenses for social workers throughout the state of Minnesota, and the board has the authority to issue professional licenses at the bachelor's level and at graduate degree levels. So our four licenses include a licensed social worker, which is the bachelor's level license in Minnesota, and that represents 43% of all of the licensed social workers in Minnesota, which is also unique to the social work profession, that we have quality trained bachelor level individuals who are providing services for mental health needs across the state. We have an LGSW, a graduate license, that represents 16%, an independent advanced generalist license, which is also a graduate license that is essentially non-clinical in nature, tends to be more administrative policy type work, that represents 6% of our pool in Minnesota. And then lastly, we have the LICSW license, which is the independent clinical license, representing 35% of all of the licensed social workers in Minnesota, coming in at just under 5,000 independent clinical social workers who are serving to meet the needs of citizens. Over the last 7 years, I think, again, you might find it interesting that the Board of Social Work has really experienced what I believe to be unprecedented growth. We have had an increase in applications and licenses granted, which has increased 50% over the last 7 years. And this really does seem to be a trend for this profession. Our total current licensees is up 22% over the last 7 years. And with all of these pretty dramatic increases, our licensing staff complement has remained the same for 10 to 15 years. And we have been managing and absorbing, although it's becoming more challenging, these dramatic increases. To speak to the governor's budget a little more specifically for you, on page 6 of the materials that you have, you will see that, like the other health licensing boards, the Board of Social Work has also been granted, or there's the proposal, for the 1.8% increase in operations, particularly specific to compensation. So what that looks like, and the proposal is, that would be an increase in FY16 of $14,000, an increase in FY17 for $28,000. So for this upcoming biennium, that's a total of $42,000. That will be an increase, an adjustment to our base budget. What I want to also talk about a little bit is the second proposal that is included in the governor's budget, and this you will find on page 7 and 8. And this is related to two new fee proposals. You know, and again, when I think about this, I don't necessarily see this as a fee increase, but this is the creation of two new fees that are necessary in order to support two new policy initiatives that the board will be bringing forward this session. And I'll explain each of them just a little bit for you. The first is what we are calling a license late fee. Now, the Board of Social Work, for the past approximately 4 years, has been enforcing unlicensed practice in this state. And as we are doing this, it just seemed reasonable that the board started to do some creative thinking about a way that we could manage unlicensed practice in this state in an alternative sort of way. And it would be an alternative mechanism to really the only tool that the board has available now, which is the disciplinary track. And so this late license fee is somewhat modeled after a Board of Nursing fee, whereby this would create an administrative fee that could be used by the board as an alternative to a disciplinary remedy in a case of unlicensed practice. And quite frankly, this proposal is just, it is a win-win for both the board and licensees. It will expedite the process. It will absolutely allow the board to reduce legal expenses. It will also allow for licensees to participate in a voluntary administrative fee rather than being taken into the disciplinary track, you know, which oftentimes results in that public disciplinary action on your record. And so again, you know, it really comes down to, I think from the board's perspective, a better way to balance the resolutions and the tools that we have in place with the types of violations. I think it's a very creative approach to dealing with these types of violations. So that is the first. And how the fee is structured is that it will be a $100 flat fee plus the prorated fee amount for the license that you should have been holding and should have been paying for. Again, the Board of Social Work fees, I am very proud to say, have been reduced by 30% since 2006. We've been able to remain steady. And our fees are based on a 24-month fee formula. Our bachelor's license for a 24-month fee is $81, which comes down to $3.37 a month for a professional license. The LGSW license is $144 for 2 years. The LISW is $216 for 2 years. And the LICSW is $238.50 for 2 years. And the reason that I provide you that detail is that you will then have a better sense of what this license late fee would really consist of. So again, it is the $100 flat fee plus the prorated monthly fee at the license that you should have been holding. So that is the first fee change. The second fee change, again, I think is a way that the board has been working towards being a little more creative. And quite frankly, this is an initiative by which the board is really trying to address the workforce shortage issues for mental health workers that we have here in Minnesota. This emeritus active license fee, again, is connected to the policy. So we can't launch this policy for this new license without the fee that corresponds to it. And this particular emeritus active license is provides an opportunity for retired social workers to engage in pro bono or volunteer practice, and they can also be paid with this emeritus active license to provide licensing supervision, which again is an incredible need in this state to bolster that pool of licensed supervisors. And the board just recognizes that when you look at the workforce, that there really are an awful lot of baby boomers who are about to leave the professions and retire. And those really are many of the most seasoned workers that we have. And so to develop this new policy, which is supported by this fee, is a mechanism whereby we can hope to engage and retain these retired social workers to still contribute to the workforce. And this particular policy provision is actually included as one of the goals in the Minnesota Mental Health Workforce Development Plan. So we are working very collaboratively across initiatives. So the active emeritus license fee that is being proposed in the governor's budget would allow for these particular licensees to obtain the emeritus active license at a license fee which would be reduced by 50%. So that's part of the initiative there, that we're hoping to be able to engage social workers with that reduced rate to at least keep them engaged. And the bottom line is, with both of these new license fees, the projected increased revenue is fairly minimal, fiscal impact fairly minimal. And in the governor's budget, the recommendation is for $3,000 per fiscal year for these two initiatives. And again, you know, as you've heard from a couple of the other boards, and as I've mentioned, the Board of Social Work will be moving forward these policy initiatives that, you know, work in conjunction with these the fees that are in the governor's budget.
Ms. Zacher-Pate,
yes.
This is actually quite creative and a good approach to trying to help address some of the workforce shortages that have been a topic of a great deal of conversation around here. As far as messaging, I'm going to channel Senator Sharon for 1 minute and suggest that you, rather than calling it a win-win, call it a win-win-win, so that it's for the board in administrative ease and the regulated members, in that they won't have disciplinary actions, but also add the win for the public, who will then be assured that the individual, the licensee, is actually licensed to provide the work that they do, which is a win-win-win. That I think you would agree with that, mm-hmm. and then incorporate that goal of all of our licensing boards. And then the late license fee is actually, I'm trying to remember, I think one or two of the other boards have adopted something like this. If I'm not, maybe I am mistaken, but I recall hearing about this a time or two before, and I think it's worked quite well. So maybe you could give me some insight. Is that where this idea came from?
And Senator Laurie, we did model this after something that is being used by the Board of Nursing.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely certain if other boards are implementing, you know, this sort of mechanism as an alternative to a disciplinary kind of action. But I know Board of Nursing does, and that was sort of the base for our model.
Great. Any other questions of members? Senator Benson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize, I've lost track of our testifier's name. Could you remind me?
Ms. Zacher-Pate.
Ms. Zacher-Pate. You mentioned that with the late license fee, you would reduce compliance costs, fewer attorney's fees. Where is that reflected? I can't find it.
Ms. Zacher-Pate.
Senator Benson and Senator Laurie, that was part of the fiscal analysis here, and I don't believe that analysis is in the governor's proposal. Essentially, with the governor's proposal in this documentation, I think that it really is more explicit in terms of increased kinds of revenues. The board, however, did that analysis as we were creating this alternative. And if I can get myself to the right document, I had that information with me. All right. And let's see if I can get it has been a while since I looked at that.
So maybe I can point members to page 7 of the change page, is where the in the proposal down towards the bottom, the create the new license late fee, the last bullet there is the reduce expenditures incurred. And it's what it's intended to do, but I don't believe it's, it is, I think you're correct. It's not really reflected in the amount. If you go and read the chart over here, the amount is actually just the changes in fees. I don't think they've booked a savings for any of these administrative savings. I'm trying to help a little
Senator bit. Laurie and Senator Benson, if I might, I did find that on another document that I had. And as the board was analyzing this, we determined that we have been reviewing about 40 unlicensed practice cases over the course of a year. And when we were analyzing, we estimated that it would be a cost savings in attorney general fees, because those, of course, are our legal counsel, of approximately $2,000 per year. We also determined that we believe that there would be an estimated $2,000 per savings in administrative hearings office kinds of fees. And so this is one where it is a combination of, you know, perhaps a little bit of additional revenue and at the same time cost savings in those legal fees. And you know, certainly also that would include board member time, compliance panel time to review these cases. So being able to do that administratively outside of our compliance process is just a, it is an overall cost savings.
All right. Any other questions of members? Senator Hurt.
Mr. Chair, I just like to make a comment. It's probably the first comment I make in this committee.
Sure. Right.
And this almost not the place to say it, but since we have all the board, you know, here and in this room, I don't want to be a hard hit on this topic. It's the topic of diversity, I don't want to be a hard hit, but since everyone here in this room, I just want to encourage all the board to be open to get board members that are, you know, representative of the changing demographic, and that's pretty much what I want to say. And that would make our state a better state and make America great. I want to tag onto a story too. Now that I have the mic, when I first arrived to this country, living in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and my family was the only Asian family in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and the Zion Lutheran Church was making an effort announcing to every member in the Zion Lutheran Church, if they happen to travel to Minneapolis, make sure to pick up a bottle of soy sauce to bring back so it make us feel at home. And that's a philosophy that I stake on till this day, that America is a place to, that keep an open arm society. So I just want to make a comment and encourage all the board here, you know, the different board, whether dentistry or optometry and pharmacy, to keep an open arm. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then, Senator Hur, when you made your trek for the soy sauce, you didn't return. And we're glad of that.
And at that time, there wasn't much, you know, Asian grocery store like today. It's a different time.
Yeah. Well, but your point about increasing diversity within our boards, within our, you know, public functions, within our workforce is incredibly important if we're going to meet the needs of consumers as we move forward, and of our professions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that we have to pay very close attention to and be cognizant about that trend, and it's absolutely critical to the success in maintaining our status as, if not the healthiest, one of the top 2-3 healthiest states in the country. This is a big challenge for us moving forward.
Senator Laurie, if I may respond to Senator, and if you'd pronounce your name again for me, please.
Senator Fong Hur.
Hur. Okay, thank you very much. I believe, you know, your comment is very well taken, and clearly as we work with the governor's office, to make board member appointments. I know that that is a very big priority for the governor as he is considering candidates to appoint to boards. And again, specific to the social work board, we have actually had a statutory requirement for probably the last 20 years that requires representation from communities of color in terms of our board members. And we actually have a statutory requirement that requires a little over one-third of our board to be members of communities of color. And we have to be sure that we do work towards always working towards that diversity.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any other questions of members? Seeing none, thank you, Ms.
Thank you very much.
We will ask if there is anyone in the public who wishes to offer testimony. Welcome to the committee. As was the case with public testimony for the other agencies within the governor's proposals, we're going to limit public testimony to 2 to 3 minutes per testifier. With that caveat, please state your name for the record and provide your insights.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Jean Lee, President and Executive Director of Children's Hope International, R&R Family Centers, and I also head APAC, which is a housing consortium. I want to support the Ombudsman for Mental Health, not only with their budget, but in expanding the budget for the different reasons. They do deal with complex cases. When I was doing court cases, we had mental health issues come up. We found out there needed to be systems change. They are in position to do so. And they also need to connect to the communities and service providers. Senator Herr raised the issue as far as culture. This was something that many of the mental health service providers are not very versed in, and also the areas of domestic abuse. And the governor's new task force for child protection has raised the issue that children fall through the cracks because they are not properly assessed and dealt with. So that is how things operate on the far end. I've also known of domestic abuse advocates who don't know mental health issues, and when they look at a child who might be abused, they might think it's okay. So I'm just showing you some of the problems in the system. Also, mental health providers who don't know cultural and domestic violence, and they also are not able to properly assess and treat. So it might be a case to support funding more mental health providers of color and who know domestic violence. But however, we found systematically that there was a problem in the system when we had President Clinton and Vice President Gore work to change the mental health system so that it was not based on theory and biases, but it focused more on treating the mind as organ and using the medical model. And then also with Governor Artie Carlson, he referred it to his commissioner, but she didn't really understand the systemic problems that were affecting them. Some of the systemic problems also include racism, and that still goes on today. So you already have information on the high costs that it costs to treat the same person and give them services further down the line when intervention is needed, but it will save so much if you catch it on the front end and fix things. So professionals, we know to turn to the Ombudsman of Mental Health, but the community and other service providers do not know that this is a source for help. And so to have them do the outreach and some of the public awareness, this is also something that may not be in the budget, and therefore we would support that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to testify? Seeing none, I will state once again, so this was the 6 boards that had actual change items. If other boards have items that they did not make the cut for the governor's budget, we will be glad to entertain bills as we move forward in the hearing process throughout the session. So bring those forward. Members, thank you for your time and attention. It took six hearings to get through the governor's proposed budget, but I found it myself very valuable and hope you did as well. Looking ahead, you know, we have to get bills through policy committees before they wind up in our jurisdiction ready for a hearing. We've only got maybe one or two straight appropriation bills, so we don't have enough bills in our committee yet to hold a hearing. We don't expect to have enough. So barring any unforeseen circumstances, I don't expect to have a hearing for the balance of this week or next week either. So we're kind of in the holding pattern waiting for bills to work their way through policy divisions, and once we get enough bills to make a good hearing, you will hear from us and we will schedule as necessary. Thank you again, and we stand adjourned. Thank you.